Welcome back to the Exterminatus Podcast, your one-stop shop for all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. I'm your host, Eric, with us, my co-host, Ray.
Hello, everyone.
And we are back to present you the news that hasn't happened yet. So lots of news was expected over the next few weeks. It just hasn't happened yet. So what hasn't happened yet? For one, we are still waiting for the big spring FAQ. It is supposed to be done sometime after Adepticon. We're now 2 weeks past Adepticon and nothing, not whatsoever. It was originally teased on the back of a White Dwarf issue, but it was now confirmed today on the Warhammer community page that Inari are getting a White Dwarf Codex Index update, quite extensive involved. And last but not least, there's also still, we're waiting on some sort of tool to prevent you from having 50 shells of gray models, some new painting apparatus or something, a new tool in your arsenal to make painting easier. Still no word on what that is. So, Ray, what's going on and what can we expect?
No real rules that we've seen, except for, you know, what's supposed to be coming. At some point, we are seeing new models, though.
That is true. So let's talk about that. Let's talk about those, because I did skip over that completely.
Since they're implementing it a little bit harder in the AOS side of things, we are seeing new Slaanesh stuff coming. And some of it's stuff we've already seen. You know, we've got the Fiends finally coming out from their Wrath and Rapture box set. The Enrapturous is coming as well. But we're finally getting our the Plastic Keeper of Secrets. And in fact, they announced yesterday that there's going to be a character model in that box that you can make. And unlike Scarbrand, you don't have to buy a different box to have it compared to the regular Keeper of Secrets. So, much like the Grand and Clean one and the Lord of Change, one box can make all the variations, including the character. And this character looks pretty interesting, all things considered.
Yeah, it does. It's an interesting transformation. Definitely Lord of Excess. So it's not all, but it still has that kind of half beast, half elegant look. It's pretty neat. It took a little while to get used to the other ones, but once I saw this character one, I was like, ooh, that's cool.
Yeah. So I own some demons, but I own no. Well, I take that back. I do technically own one squad of the demonettes, the old metal ones. But outside of that, I don't have Slaanesh. That being said, I want one of these Keepers of Secrets.
Yeah, for me, it's I might have a little more Slaanesh than you, just a tad, and but it definitely, with when you mentioned the size increase, it's actually supposedly slightly taller than, or at least equal to the Bloodthirster models, so it's back in league with all the other greater demons. So it's important to do that. I have a few third party models that are not quite as tall as that, so it'd be nice to kind of mix them in. The third party model ones I have probably make good demon princes, so I think that'll be pretty cool. And but it definitely, is it the Enchantress, the one that's playing the harp?
Yeah,
definitely want to pick up one of those. And so yeah, the big reveal today was all the AOS rules. They did say that the 40k rules will be coming soon. We thought it would be coming today. Didn't happen, but hopefully it'll come out this week. So I'll be excited to see what the 40k rules will be, because a lot of those AOS references really don't port over.
Yep. And I don't really think we're going to see as many rules changes as would be the case if they ported over much of this stuff from AOS.
I'm curious what they do with the chariots, because for a while there, because the kits were hard to get, I was wondering if they were going to get rid of them. But looks like they just were getting repackaged, maybe. That's all I can think
of. Yeah, I think we're going to be seeing a bunch of repackaging. It's kind of like what we've been seeing with just about everything else. We just saw it with the demon engines. with the Chaos Space Marine release, you know, I was intrigued by the fact that all of a sudden it was showing a bunch of them, you know, no longer available when they were very new models. And yeah, it was just, you know, new package.
And those chariots, even in the index form, are pretty neat. You know, they have some really good usage. The kind of, there's three variants, and I can't remember which one does which. There's one that's strictly attack, and the other one is basically a herald transport. Then there's the big one, you know, the drawn. It's got like three people driving on it, and but if I remember right, if it does mortal wounds on the charge, you know, kind of like the old Hammer of Wrath rules, which was like, ooh, we take that with being able to advance charge in the same turn. That can get pretty nasty pretty quick.
Yeah, is that not? Are those not in the codex?
I'd have to look at. They're in the Demon Codex. I can't remember. I can't remember exactly what they did, because I remember looking. I'm like, okay, that's pretty cool. I just don't own enough of them to make them viable. And then I was like, oh, with the rule of three, you had to get a little more creative. I know at one point I had a list that was like eight chariots. You know, it was just ridiculous. Because it was also, the hard part was the idea was supposed to be like a board control list. It could race forward. It could charge you on turn one. But those things aren't that durable. You know, so I was worried about the counterattack. Would I just lose half my army after turn two? So I never got a chance to really play test it. But still pretty neat. So.
Yeah, well. You know, oddly enough, when it comes to durability, you don't really see a whole lot of that in this edition, except for things like Death Guard that have their special Feel No Pain style rolls.
Mm-hmm. And I think that was done by design. You know, it's definitely things were supposed to die quicker, which I'm okay with. I mean, you think about the scale of weaponry you're supposed to be playing with, and it would make sense to speed up the game a little bit. And so I think that was by design at this point, that, you know, there's not a lot of this tanking and units that are nigh on indestructible. You know, don't wish to see a Screamer Star coming back anytime soon. So, true. So yeah. But there's still stuff out there. I mean, a 30-man blob squad of Poxwalkers is still hard to deal with. So, still got to put a lot of resources into that. So, but if I remember right, the chariots are only like toughness 6 with a 5-up invul. So they're pretty flimsy, if I remember right. So I'm curious to see if they change those up a little bit.
All right.
Interesting enough, as we mentioned, lots of news still pending, but one of the things I thought was absolutely remarkable is the big FAQ, as well as this preview of the Chukari. Good, Eric. The Inari, there's no Jakari preview. Sorry. The Inari, not a single rumor, not a single leak anywhere.
They're keeping it tight lip.
Yeah. So I'm curious to see first of all, how are they doing that? And number two, you know, what can we expect at this point? There's a lot of speculation out there. I can't really separate wish listing from reliable information at this point, so it's just, you know, kind of a moot point to talk about. But I finally found a way to verbalize what I always wanted from the Inari, so I'll stick it in here. In the books, they have since you're each Archon and Farseer and Altark and whatever, they're individually pledging themselves to Inari, you know, to one of these groups. And then when they travel together, they're kind of as a small elite pack, and then each of these elite packs kind of form your army. So in game terms, it'd be cool, similar to way Scarboys work in the Orc Codex. And that is, you spend a command point and you can nominate a unit of boys to become either Scarboys, and I think the other one was the one with the more armor. Not heavy boys. What the heck were they called? I can't remember now. But there was like variants of these, and you could it wasn't like since it's pre-game, you could spend as many command points you wanted. So you can make all your you have six boy units, you can make all six of them Scar boys for, and they get like bonus attacks. Or they had a different profile. Basically, they had some additions to their profile. Ard boys, duh. That's what I was thinking of. If you really want the old Ard boys back, it doesn't have a separate unit entry. You just spend command points and make your boys Ard boys, and they would get the more durable version of the Orc boys. I could see them doing that. For example, supposedly the Vizark has his own specialty troop of Incubi. And Incubi have the rare distinction of one of the few units in 8th edition that got worse from Index to Codex. So I would love to see that come in, that they have specialty detachments like that. So that's what I've been trying to think of how to verbal. I could not get that out for the last few episodes. So, but according to the G-dubs there, what we're expecting to see is 6 warlord traits, 6 psychic powers, 17 stratagems, and 6 relics specific for the Anari. All in your next May edition of the White Dwarf.
Yeah, and I want to say something real quick about the new White Dwarves right now, for anybody who's not really paying too close attention. These things are very popular. I was interested in picking up the one from, I believe it's January, which has the Crimson Fist stuff in it. Didn't know anybody who's got a spare one. Looked it up on eBay and found out that people are selling it on eBay for $30 to $40. I thought it was a fluke.
Prices.
Yeah. I thought it was a fluke. So I looked for the Assassin one on eBay, and it's going for about $30 already for that, too.
So the magic word today, folks, is subscribe.
Yeah. If you want to make sure to get the these, you might want to start considering subscribing. It's crazy to say it because, it's not something you really think about. At least it was never one for me. I remember the days where I could just jump, stop in my friendly local game store and just ask the manager, hey, do you have this a copy of, the White Dwarf from such and such time, and there was at least a chance he'd have a couple copies.
I can tell you our local game store has usually the last 2 White Dwarfs lying around, but I have to double check by if they're sequential. I know the Crimson Fist one is gone, so yeah. So I have to see if and I believe the Assassin one has been bought out, but there's 2. I saw they had some older ones there. I mean, I remember the days when you're like, okay, because I liked buying the White Dwarf in my local game store because it A, drew me in to buy other stuff, and B, it was a way to support the store. And but they used to be like, it was almost like a comic book. You could almost reserve it, hey, rather than getting a subscription. It may have to go back to those days again. So I'm not actually sure what day it comes out, so I know when to pick it up.
It's the first Friday of the month.
Okay.
I know this because I'm kind of a Unari fanboy. I love the books that came out for him, and I like the story. And despite the fact that I don't actually own any Eldar models, I want to get my hands on this next White Dwarf.
Should be pretty exciting. Curious comes from there. Other thing that's tightly under wraps. Games Workshop at Adepticon previewed that they are coming out with something new to make it easier to paint your figures. And so one thing they flat out denied on their Facebook page is it's not pre-painted models. Now, some people are still speculating that molded colored ones, if you notice some of their Splinter games, like Necromunda, actually, I don't know if the Necromunda figures, but I know the Kill Team starter sets come molded in plastic. So they're like, for example, the Adeptus Mechanicus were red, and the Ultramarines are blue, and I think the Gene Sealer cults were purple. So they're kind of like Space Hulk, they come in pre-colored. So maybe that's coming to 40K. Who knows? The popular vote right now is that GW is coming out with their own airbrush. They have their own line of airbrush paint, so it makes sense you use a GW airbrush to go with all your regular bristle brushes. Me, I have a completely different theory. You got to bear with
me. So what's your theory?
So my theory is this. Somehow buried on the web pages, I don't know where this originally posted. I only found it on Pinterest. And yeah, there's a lot of cool 40K stuff on Pinterest. There's these guides. So there's two of them. For the advanced painter, there's called the heavy metal guides. And they're like how to get like, you know, 11 different shades of paint into this one particular area. So it's a very difficult color to paint. Clearly not for me. Ones I like are the Battle Ready series. And it literally is how to paint a model in 14 steps or less. And some of these have been showing up on their Facebook page. And by the way, I don't know who this new guy is. It's not Peachy. It's not, I just blanked on the other guy's name.
Duncan.
I don't know who this guy is. He's a nice guy and he seems to be getting the job done, but he does these quicker versions, these battle ready techniques of getting your models done quickly. I love them. They get to the point. If you really want to add detail later, you can always go back and spring it up. Interesting enough, when you see these, both the print version and the video versions, guess what usually what the last step is? Apply a shade or a wash. So my theory is null oil by the quart, that they're going to come out with a dipping technique.
That might just be the craziest theory I have ever heard.
Awesome. Way to overachieve.
You know what that makes me think of? All those old episodes of the 11th Company where you guys would talk about dumping or dipping models.
Yes. So interesting that that used to be a technique that historical gamers used to use all the time. And interesting enough, the guy who does Army Painter, you know, the guy who's making, developed that formula, is a former GW employee. So the old days, you actually used like floor, you know, furniture wax or furniture stains and stuff like that, and you diluted it and made your own crazy alchemy to get the right mixture. And then Army Painter came out and they've got their, you know, strong tone, medium tone, light tone for your own personal uses. The only thing I never liked about those things, whereas they dry so glossy, you have to hit them with dull coat afterward. So that's what I'm thinking, is that maybe GW was recognizing this segment of the market and they're going to come out with their own dipping.
Crazy. I'm still uncertain of what it's going to be. It's definitely going to be something painting related. I'm leaning more along the lines, if anything, that we're going to see a wider selection of the cans. You know, of the, we see like the Chaos Black, the Korax White. Mm-hmm. I think we might see a wider selection there because there's not really a lot. It's basically white, black, gray, and the certain Space Marine base colors.
Right.
So you've got the blue for the Ultramarines, the yellow for the Imperial Fists, the there's the Space Wolves blue, there's the Dark Angels green, the Blood Angels red. Interestingly enough, they don't actually have one for flesh tone. They don't have any of the flesh colors for the can spray.
I thought they had a Shoppy Bro. Maybe not.
I would not use a Shopty Bone as a flesh tone. I'm talking something more like Bugman's Glow or the new color that they came out with recently, along with the Ionadith Deepkin. It's kind of a pale white.
Oh, that thing. Yeah. I forgot what that's called too. I can't even pronounce it. I remember seeing it and I was like, that's cool. I don't know how to pronounce that. But I think they also have Bolt Metal, the silver.
And oh yeah, they've got the silver, they've got the gold, which is still the most expensive can you can buy. It's like $30.
It's crazy. But
again, you know, you've got, and they've got whole armies that are very, you know, low on the clothing and no flesh spray.
Good point. Still telling you, it's a dip. You'll see. I'm on to something. Anyway, beyond that, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back from the break, we'll go over the tournament events from the past weekend and some revelations that we talked about a few episodes. Let's see if they finally come to fruition this past week in tournament action. See you guys in a few seconds.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
Welcome back after the break. Time for the tournament report. We start our first tournament, although it had a clever name. It didn't quite get to full status, but it's worth noting quite a few things here. First of all, the name of it, Silicon Valley Smash, but in parentheses, it had a subtitle of Brandon Grant's 29th GT victory. So, quick spoiler alert, did he win? Yes. The bad news is they didn't actually get the GT level. They were actually short on players. So, congratulations for winning, but it wasn't counting as a GT. So your top five for the Silicon Valley Smash are the following. Brian Pullen in fifth place with Tau Empire. Fourth place, Aaron Knafla. Hope I pronounced it right, Aaron. With Grey Knights. Yeah, that's right. Grey Knights finished in the top five. Jake Nelson with Gene Stealer Cult. Michael Timpey with Necrons. And the aforementioned Brandon Grant with Astra Militarum. So interesting feat here, Ray. Guess what? Brandon Grant in 71% of the field. That'd be 14 out of the others. 21 players who showed up had in common.
Let me guess. Are they all what everybody said it would be? Soup?
Just the exact opposite. 71% of the players at this event were mono faction. So we thought what's happened, we'd see the rippling effects last week because it was the first official week that the rule was in effect, but as a lot of TOs stood up, say, hey, we put moratorium on rule on list changes, so we're probably not going to see that. This was our first week, and it came out screaming at this point. Now, many of you are probably saying, well, the Necron player came in second. He was mono faction since the day one, but Gene Stealer Cult, that's no additional Tyranids. It's strictly Gene Stealer Cult list. The Grey Knight player, yeah, Grey Knights, 100% Grey Knights. Don't believe me? Here we go. Ready? Here's his list. It fits on a note card. It's so small. Starts with the battalion, Grandmaster Nemesis Dread Knight, and actually two of those, both with Psy Cannon and a Nemesis Demon Great Hammer. He has three strike squads, all with falchions, and an Interceptor squad, also with falchions, and then he has a Vanguard detachment featuring Drago, Apothecary, a Paladin Ancient, and a Paladin Squad featuring five Paladins with Waiting Staves, an Incinerator, and then one of them has a Paragon Nemesis Demon Hammer, and followed by a heavy support choice of a Land Raider Crusader. There you go, 2,000 points, and he went 3-1-1.
That's kind of awesome.
It's kind of awesome, and you also look at his points. Tied his first game at 13, 36 points in his second win, 30 points in his third win, 36 in the last round. He did lose in the fourth round, but he only scored 5 points there. But Aaron Knafla, hat goes off to you. There was one soup list in the top 10. So Joseph Hillegrass was the highest ranked soup player. He came in with an Imperial list in sixth place, also going 3-2. Jonathan Blake came in eighth place with an Aldari list, and then Lauren Dole with an Imperialist came in ninth. But we also have another Necron player making it to the top 10, and that would be Michael Celeste. So not to discount William Farley coming in seventh with Imperial Knights. So yeah, mono faction's a thing, and it's not just for the hobbyists.
people are winning with
people them. People are winning with them. So I'm curious to see how this plays out. Matter of fact, I actually did stats, took all the lists from this weekend that we talk on, all the tournaments we're going to talk about today, and it comes out to about 56% of them were mono faction. Now, some of the more foreign tournaments didn't really embrace it as much, so that's why I'm going to bring up Silicon Smash being such a very high percentage.
Take me to the front.
Speaking of internationally, let's go a little bit further north to Richmond, British Columbia, in the Great White North for the Wet Coast GT. And their top five looks something like this. In fifth place, Matt Czar with Orcs. It's a very cool team name, Xenos Filth. It's really cool. Appreciate that. Fourth place, Eric Tanner with High Fleet Kraken. Third place, John Paul Mouet with Eldari. Second place, Matthew Toes, or I think I picked to pronounce it, with Chaos Demons. And first place, the King of All Canada, Jim Vessel, with Chaos Soup, taking a perfect 5-0. Matthew was also 5-0, but it was about 15 points off of what Jim Vessel's total was, landing him in second place.
Yeah, I had a laugh. I've actually seen a couple things calling Jim Vessel the King of the North.
King of the North.
Yeah, it's for anybody who doesn't know, that's a Game of Thrones reference there.
All I know about Game of Thrones is there's a box of fancy Oreos waiting for me after this show. Super excited about that. So quick look. I think Jim is still playing his usual list. Yes, he is. So a whole bunch of Nurgle demons, followed by another detachment, another battalion of mixed demons, Bloodletters, Pink Horrors, and Brimstone Horrors. And then he brings in a Supreme Command detachment featuring Armon, two Demon Princes, and a whole bunch of Hellforge Contemptor Dreads with Conversion Beamers. If you don't know what a Conversion Beamer does, it makes you cry. So make sure to read up on that.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. It seems like the Conversion Beamer was a forgotten bit of gaming equipment for a long while.
See,
it's only recently I'm starting to hear people use it again. Yeah.
That's always when you're trying to look back. There's a couple every now and then you find some hidden gems in the codex. What does soup look like these days? Start with our third place, John Paul Mouet. He's playing an Eldari list. Looks something like this. Outlighter detachment featuring Farseer Skyrunner. Three unit of 10 Wind Riders with scatter lasers. That's right. Wind Riders are fast attack now. They keep thinking they're troop choices. Like, why did he do that? He follows it up with an airwing detachment of two Crimson Hunter Exarchs and two Hemlock Fighters. The Crimson Exarchs have twin star cannons, in case you're keeping track at home. And then finally, a Cabal of the Black Heart featuring two Archons, three units of five Cabalite Warriors. Two of those units are armed with Shredders. Three Ravagers, all kitted out with Disintegrators, and one Raider and one Venom. So maximizing all things pointy ears on that one. And so get a couple, looking down the list. Again, a few Forces of the Hive Mind, which is a mix of Gene Seer Cult and Tyranids. So quite a few there. Follow lots of Eldari, lots of Imperium. So this tournament had a little more of your soup variety at this point. But interesting enough, Andrew Iyer, we feel for you, man. He is the winner of the Wooden Spoon, playing Orcs. He finished a perfect 0-5 on the day. Actually, looks like, 0-5. He had a real big game on game two. He scored 17 points. That was the highest he had scored that day. So, quick look at his list. He is taking an Evil Sun's Outrider detachment, featuring a Deathkiller Wartrike, and holy cow, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Unit of 5 knobs on war bikes and a pain boy on a war bike. And then he has 2 units of 3 def captas, all with a big bomb and capta rockets. And then he finally rounds it up with a unit of regular war bikers featuring a boss knob and 5 war bikers. And he duplicates that unit one more time. Then he adds a spearhead detachment, also Evil Sons. And this is the Dreadwaw from Vigilus. 2 big mechs, 1 on war bike, 1 with a shock attack gun. It's got the super souped up one. And then 2 units of 3 Killikans, all with buzzsaws and rocket launches. and a Mega Dread with a custom force field, big Zappa, and a Ripperclaw. It sounds like a really cool list.
Interesting list.
The fact that he came in dead last, I'm like, really? Okay. But he had lots of company, by the way.
Sometimes that's just a matchup.
Yeah, I think so. There's a lot of players that actually went 0-5. So, but he is the master of the wooden spoon. So congratulations to all players at the Wet Coast GT.
To the last man and the last round!
We're now go way out west to the land down under. Actually, I believe it is, yes, Australia, New South Wales. West Gofford, to be exact, for Warzone Central Coast. And their top five looks something like this. In fifth place, Kieran Howard with Chaos Space Marines. In fourth place, Jordan Palmer Young with Adeptus Custodes. A tie for second place between Boz Surani, featuring Astra Militarum, and David Clark with Adeptus Astartes. But your winner with an Imperium Soup list is none other than Christopher Wright, going a perfect 5-0. Also massing a truckload of points. So his list looks something like this. He starts with a Death Watch battalion. Interesting. One Watch Master is what I'm trying to say, with a Guardian Spear. And then a Watch Captain with Jump Pack, Thunder Hammer, Storm Bolter, and Beacon Angelus. And he's got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 veteran squads. Most of them, 1, 2, 3, 4 of them are 4 veterans with Storm Bolter and Storm Shield, 1 veteran with a Heavy Bolter, 3 Terminators with a Storm Bolter and Power Sword, and 1 Vanguard veteran with Bolt Pistol and Storm Shield. And then he mixes it up quite a bit. He's got 2 of them where he's got 4 veterans, 3 Terminators, a bike, and a Vanguard. Then as he tries to, I think, skimp on points here, he's got 1 unit with 4 veterans, 2 Terminators, and a biker. Then he's got the fifth one is 4 veterans and 2 Terminators. So all over the place, but follows it up now with Adeptus Sororitas Outrider featuring Order of the Bloody Rose. It's got a Canonist and 3 units of Seraphim, 1 unit of 10, 1 unit of 7, 1 unit of 5. The large unit maxing out the plasma pistols. And then last but not least, he's got a Spearhead Detachment of Adeptus Mechanicus featuring Stygies 8. So he's got a Tech Priest Engine Seer and 3 Onager Doom Crawlers, all with Neutron Lasers and Broad Spectrum Data Tethers. That's a crazy list.
Yeah, it is.
It's very versatile, though. He's got the long-range shooting from Adeptus Mechanicus. He's got the fast reach out and touch you with the Seraphim, and then I have to go through all the rules, but basically each one of these veteran squads has all the tricks. The Terminators, I think, can fall back. I can't remember which one does which. Something allows them to fall back and shoot. Another one, he has guys to tank. He's got all the Storm Bolters, so he's got a ton of shots. Of course, he's got the specialist ammunition. It's got tools, man. And he's got a Smash Captain to deal with the big stuff. Christopher, nice. We salute you. And nothing's worse to go all the way to North South Wales to come in last, but nonetheless, somebody has to win the Wooden Spoon. And the winner for that is Jed Greathead. He came in last place, going a perfect 0-5 with Asuriani. I kind of felt bad for him. He actually had some good games. He actually scored 20 points in his first game and his last game, so he was actually quite competitive. He's on a great team called the Adeptus Short Bus. That's an awesome name. Love to tell you more, but Jed also, not only did he fail to roll enough sixes, but he also failed to upload his list. So we won't be able to tell you much about it. Remember, kids, stay in school and upload your lists. So there you have it, your tournament report for this week. If you're a tournament organizer and would like us to give a shout-out to event you've got coming up, hit us up on our Facebook page and let us know when your event is. And we'd be more than happy to talk about that well in advance. Normally, we only talk about the events coming up the coming weekend. But if you'd like to hear more about your event, let us know.
Demon, fear my wrath.
By the way, we're going to be expanding our reach across the internet, learn more, become more with the Matrix. Ray, want to talk about some of our future plans right now?
So we have begun the process of creating a YouTube channel. It's already created, but there's absolutely nothing on it at the moment. We're working on kind of playing with a few of the things to figure out what we can and can't do with the channel. One thing we know we're going to do is we're going to start posting some of our episodes on there so that you can listen to it on YouTube as opposed to always downloading it off the web and just playing it over your phone or your computer. It'll be a little bit easier for some of our listeners. We're looking at possibly doing some battle reports and posting it on there as well. And we're also looking at possibly doing some instructional videos. Anybody who is kind of new to the game and new to, you know, the podcasting for 40K wouldn't know it, but Eric actually builds a lot of the terrain in our community. So we might do some terrain build videos, depending on what we're able to do.
I used to do a couple of videos for Frontline Gaming for a while, as well as my own Facebook page. I'm looking to get back into that. Learned a couple of new techniques, and it helps a lot of you tournament organizers or just guys who want a different experience in playing on their game. So those will be coming back. Other areas, we're going to add some video as well. Sometimes when I'm rattling off all these numbers and rankings, it'd be kind of cool to see your name in lights as you want to, you know, place well at a particular event. So as we're looking at adding those to the YouTube feed, and then also separating that as a separate tournament report that you can download in shorter segments. So if you don't have to listen to the entire show just to get see your name in lights. But we'd still appreciate it if you download the episode. So look for that in the next few weeks, getting all the kinks out. I have all this super duper editing software that's very intimidating. So my 13-year-old is teaching me how to use it. So I'm really excited. She has an extensive YouTube channel. So I was actually quite impressed with her. So,
all right.
So anyway, we're going to take a quick break. After the break, we'll go over your ITC top 10, as well as your upcoming ITC events. Be back right after this. Welcome back after the break. So we are the week before. For most of you out there, you know this as the week, the Monday before Avengers Endgame comes out. For many other ones, it's the end of the first round of the Stanley Cup. And for those of you in football, you're especially here in Arizona, we are T-minus 3 days away from figuring out how the Cardinals are going to screw up the first pick overall. So let's talk about some champions. That'd be the top 10 ITC for this week. And that'd be in 10th place, Scott Horace with 702 points. Just ahead of him, wow, how the mighty have fallen. John Lennon has dropped steadily, but he still hangs into the top 10. 8th place, Dan Sammons. 7th place, Richard Siegler. 6th place, here's a name we haven't talked about in a while, TJ Lanigan with 717 points, gets himself in 6th place. Brian Poulin, who we just talked about earlier, moves into 5th place. Richard Cozart in 4th place with 744 points. Ray Almuda jumps to 3rd place with 847 points. Daniel Hesters at 868 points, but still with a gargantuan almost 200-point lead is none other than the King of Canada, Jim Vessel, with 1,047 points. Probably the biggest thing we've seen is approximately half of our top 10 have now completed 5 events. The other have only completed 4 events. Still lots of time left to see some movement. And by the way, what's going on next weekend, Ray?
All right, we've got the 2019 Freeblade Spring Cup at the Royal Canadian Legion in Regina, Saskatchewan. The OzCon GT at the West Plains Civic Center in West Plains, Missouri. There is the Battle for Los Angeles GT at the Holiday Inn in Burbank, California. There is the Lost Knowledge GT at the Level Up Gaming in Pensacola, Florida. The Barnyard Brawl ITC Major 128-player April event in Greenville, South Carolina. The Stud or Scrub Open in Cambridge, Ontario, Canada. There's the St. George's Champion at University of Wolverhampton Telford campus in England. And that looks to be it.
All right. So we have a lot of coverage. Of course, any additional breaking news between now and our next recording, look for it on our Facebook page. Again, you can download these episodes on Facebook as well as iTunes or Spotify. Make sure to leave us a review. We definitely appreciate that. In the meantime, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And thank you for listening to the Exterminatus podcast.